ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
problems, well, not my problems, because there's no such thing as no problems in the material world.
At least my eyes haven't been steaming and watering. Okay, so calm. What a list. Calm. Manu. Quote. Anger. Madda. Which is kind of like mad, right? Pride. Lobha. Greed. Shoka. Lamentation. Moha. Illusion. Maya. Fear. Prabhupada says here, the mind is the original cause of material language. Why? Because it has many enemies. That attack the mind. And Prabhupada's simple solution, very simple solution, is to always keep the mind busy. Right? The mind is unstoppable. The deity of the mind is Aniruddha. Aniruddha means literally he who can't be stopped. If Krishna wants something, he gets it. What was that? Let's look at the Prabhupada quotes. Mare Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mare Ke. Something like that. If Krishna wants to be you dead, then you're finished. If he wants to keep you alive, then nobody can kill you. Right? So Krishna is all powerful. And the mind is very tricky because and Krishna mentions this in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that the mind can be the best of friends or the worst of enemies. And it's the worst of enemies when it's not controlled and engaged in Krishna's service. Otherwise, if it's acting in Krishna's service, then it is a wonderful ally. Just like, you know, you can have a problem. And hard to work out what the solution is. Right? But the mind is always ticking away, working, chipping away at all the problems. Right? And then, you know, you wake up in the morning and you hop in the shower and all of a sudden the solution comes. Right? This happens to me very often. Right? And so if we've got the mind thinking about Krishna and thinking about Krishna's service, then it can be a wonderful ally because it's working all the time. And it, you know, has different levels of activity. But if the mind is not positively engaged, then that same mechanism can work against us. Because it'll be operating and contemplating and thinking. About thinking, feeling and willing is what goes on within the mind. Right? And so then, if it's not operating on the transcendental or on the spiritual platform, when it's engaged in devotional service, then it will be doing the opposite in material activities. Really thinking about engaging in material activity. And even the intelligence, with the intelligence, we're able to discriminate. Right? Intelligence means the ability to be able to distinguish between things and to work out what is good and what is bad. Even our intelligence may work it out that whatever we're meditating on is not good for us, but still the power of the mind overwhelms the intelligence. And so we keep thinking about things that are not beneficial for us. And as a consequence then, the mind
becomes overcome by these enemies, beginning with lust. And controlling the mind is pretty much the pivotal point, or the essential element of bhakti practice. And of course, you know, it's focused very much on chanting Hare Krishna. And especially, we control the mind or we're free, we're liberated from this the tyranny of the materially absorbed mind by chanting Hare Krishna. Right? Because by hearing, it's a very simple process, but not necessarily easily applied. So that is, we absorb the mind in the sound vibration of the Maha Mantra, and by absorption in that, regular absorption in that sound vibration, we're able to turn the mind or cleanse Jeta-Vagabha-Namajana-Bhava-Maha-Dabhagini-Vapanam. We can extinguish the fire. You know, this lust, greed, anger, these are all symptomatic of the fire of material existence. We get burned by these things, pretty much impelled by the mode of passion, impelled by the mode of ignorance. Passion pursued converts itself into ignorance, because, you know, our desire to be happy, to enjoy in a material sense, is always going to be frustrated by reality. Ajyantavanta kunte anate shunamate buddha. And here that the healers mentioned buddha. The intelligent person doesn't pursue these yehi samsparsa japoga tukka yonaya evite. The contact with the senses, the contact with the senses, with the sense objects, everything in the material world looks attractive, especially influenced by the mode of passion. But then when we touch the senses with the objects of the senses, and there may be some pleasure in that. But I think Prabhupada mentions somewhere in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that pleasure is actually the enemy. Right? The enemy of the living entity. Because in the end, it all degrades into, what is it here? Shoka, moha, madness also. And we see we have material facility, and then we think, yes, I am so accomplished, I am so wonderful, I am so advanced. And when the reality is usually the everything happening in the true world has a beginning, a middle, and then an end. And in the beginning, and even in the middle, there may be some pleasure, but ultimately, in the end, everything is taken away from us. So we're very fortunate to have the Maha Mantra as our weapon, if you like. This is Lord Chaitanya's weapon, the Maha Mantra. And Lord Chaitanya's, or Krishna's mission, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinasaya Chatushkitam, is to save the devotees and destroy the mysteries. And in previous yugas, that was done in all sorts of dynamic ways, but very often meaning, you know, you're killed. But Lord Chaitanya's mission in the Kali Yuga is the devotees are protected and the demons are destroyed by the Maha Mantra, by the sound of the Maha Mantra, or by hearing and then by chanting. Shravanam Kirtanam, the beginning of bhakti. And so this is our methodology for cleansing the mind of the influences of material association in the form of kam, manu, mada, loha, sokha, moha, bhaya, fear. And this is the list. Where we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 enemies of the mind. Prabhupada mentions, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions the 6 enemies of the mind. Manu is usually krodha, anger, and this is mentioned in the beginning of the negative instruction in the first, in the purport to the first verse. And of course, that those instructions of the Upadeshamrita are very relevant to this point. One who's intelligent shouldn't put faith in the mind, but rather the mind should be always engaged in devotional service. So even when we're sleeping, we're chanting. Right? When we're sleeping, we're thinking about Krishna. Because mind works, whatever it does, it's always doing something. Can't stop it. So the proper way to relieve the mind from these enemies is to purify it through engagement in devotional service. What's the first word of that verse? The first word, Vajra Vegam. Vajra Vegam. So, speaking Vajra Vegam. Talk about Krishna. Manasa. Krodha Vega. There's the thinking part, engaging the mind. And anger. Well, and all of these which come along with the mind. Asa Krodha Vega, Jiva Vega, Udara Pasta Vega. So all of these pushings which come into the mind. Right? These are all of these ideas and pushings, they all come into the mind and, you know, make us go in all different directions. So the simple solution is to chant Hare Krishna and to be engaged in devotional service. To be active. I read a very interesting, nice story this morning from Hari Suri. Prabhupada was talking to a gentleman, and this gentleman said that he's seen the Vaishnavas and they're all lazy men, chant, sleep and snore. Chant, sleep and snore. And Prabhupada said, you haven't seen a Vaishnava. This is not a Vaishnava. You haven't seen the Vaishnava. And Prabhupada said, there are two historical battles in the Vedic literature, or the, you know, in the history of the world. That is the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. And the culmination of each of these stories is in the battle of the battle in Lanka. And the hero of that battle is Hanuman. And the Mahabharata is the battle of Kurukshetra, and the hero of the battle of Kurukshetra is Arjuna. And Hanuman jumped from India to Lanka and then destroyed Ravana's palace, you know, burned down Lanka, a big fight. And, you know, Hanuman definitely not a lazy guy. Prabhupada quoted that song about, what was it? He was talking about the devotees imitating Hanuman by eating a lot, but then they're sleepy. What did Prabhupada say? Lanka jumping melancholy. They have to do something that they feel depressed. But I don't mind the eating part, but when it comes to doing something, they want to sleep. But this is not a Vaishnava. And Arjuna didn't want to fight. In the beginning, he didn't want to fight. But Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. And then Arjuna decided, yes, I will fight. So Prabhupada said, this is a Vaishnava is active and vigilant. Right? Active and vigilant. Pays attention to the details and is vigorous in his pursuance of devotional practice, devotional service, not sitting down and sleeping. Of course, you know, we may fall into the sitting down and sleeping category occasionally, but we should strive to be active and dynamic in our, and then later on, and we see this with Rishabdev, dynamic and active as a younger man, but then in later life retreat and chant and perform bhajan. Well, that's okay. But first of all, very dynamic and very active. This is a symptom of a Vaishnava. And that way then the mind is automatically engaged and the mind is automatically controlled. And so there's no room for these enemies of the mind to manifest in their material. Because there's also desire to serve Krishna. Right? We have to desire. You can't get rid of desire. If you have no desires, what does that mean? You're dead. Yeah. If you don't have any desire, then you're just a stone. Right. So there's nothing wrong with desire, except the calm is driven by passion and material considerations. And the desire of a devotee is essentially to please Krishna. It's very simple. And that pleasing of Krishna is manifest through rendering service to the spiritual master. It's not a very complicated thing, actually. And so that's why there's submission and inquiry and then service rendered to the spiritual master. This is also given in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Sarva Dhanam Pavitra Jaman Nikam Sharanam Raja. You should surrender to me. But how the surrender to Krishna is described in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Tadviti, Panipate, and Padiprasnina Sevaya. The details are learned from a devotee and from pleasing the devotees. So that's our mission in life, our desire is to please the devotees. There is nothing more satisfying than making Krishna's devotees happy or seeing them happy. Because if they're happy, then guess what? Krishna's happy. Huh? And so, this is our methodology. We have desire, but we embrace the Guru's desire. So desires are not out. They can't be. What will suppression accomplish? Anger, manu, or krodha, Prabhupada gives an example of Arjuna. You can get angry for Krishna's cause if somebody's attacking the devotees or attacking ISKCON, or one can become angry in the service of the Lord. So that way, anger can be engaged and is then sublime. Getting angry because your desires are not being met or frustrated is not a good sign. Not a good sign. Bhishma Dev recommends, if you want to remove anger, if you want to be free from anger, then you have to cultivate the quality of what? What's the quality one has to cultivate in order to be rid of anger? Forgiveness. You have to learn how to forgive others if they're behaving foolishly. One of the items that's recommended for human beings is not to be angry. Manju, speak sweetly. Of course, Prabhupada does make the point in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that a teacher may be angry at his students, but not at others. No? So it's okay to be. In some situations, it's okay to be angry. But not, all-consuming, lost-the-plot kind of anger. Sometimes parents have to get angry with their children. Well, otherwise the children misbehave. So anger does have its place, appropriately applied. And of course that's engagement in personal service purifies all of our activities. Pride. A devotee can be proud of his of being in the association of the devotees. He can take some pride in Krishna's wonderful character and qualities in the quality and character of the devotees, one's associates. So greed. One can be greedy for more service. Although we have to be careful, you can also overdo it, even as a devotee. These things should be tempered balance. Yukta Viharasya, Yukta Svapna Bhavasu, Yukta Kamasa. Yukta Chaitasya Kamasu, Yoga Bhavati Dukkaha. So balance is required also. Otherwise, even in bhakti, passion can overtake us. We have to be careful. Right? Need to be balanced. So, what Prabhupada's or what is being referred to here in these different qualities coming from the contaminated mind, they can be purified by chanting Hare Krishna, by being engaged in devotional service under the guidance of the Vaishnavas, of the devotees. And then that way the mind and the enemies of the mind can be subdued or purified. So that the mind then becomes the friend rather than the enemy of the devotee. So we put our faith in engaging the mind in devotional service rather than putting the mind putting our faith in the mind itself, because we'll be betrayed very often by the mind's perspective on things. You know, we one day we think we're absolutely sure about something, the mind's completely convinced, then the next day we discover that we're completely in illusion about what was going on. The mind properly engaged in devotional service will be purified. And that way then the mind and also the senses will be purified. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Sometimes it is hard to tell whether there's the thought that's coming from the mind or is it the intelligence.
The intelligence. How to tell the difference between the mind and the intelligence?
Yeah, who's dictating us?
That's a good question. I don't know. Well, put it this way, yes, it's not uncommon for us to have an inspiration that we ignore, which is actually beneficial for us. And discriminating between the mind and the intelligence. How do we tell the difference between the mind and the intelligence? I can tell you one story. You know, you can go to the... Well, thinking the other day, the Rialto used to be the tallest building in Melbourne, but now if you look, you can't even see it anymore. There's so many other buildings that are bigger than it. But anyway, go to the tallest building in Melbourne and stand at the top. And what will happen? You'll get an impulse to jump. That's the mind. Because the intelligence will say, no, not a good idea. So, you know, intelligence is that ability to analyse a situation or a circumstance and be able to ascertain whether it's beneficial for our service or our devotional practice, and you know we exercise that activity on the, it's happening on the subtle. It's happening on a subtle level. And my personal experience is that if we're chanting Hare Krishna and able to hear that sound vibration of the mantra, if we're absorbing our mind and intelligence in the messages of the Bhagavad Gita and of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and hearing, you know, hearing regularly, then that strengthens our intelligence, because this is all going on a subtle level. We've got the physical body and the physical activities, but internally we have our subtle action, if you like, right? And that's the mind and the intelligence. And we can't stop either, actually, because they're both a function of that subtle energy, still material energy, right? And by a strong sadhana, we're able to somehow or other, by the spiritual process, if you like, we're able to strengthen our intelligence. We have some clarity of vision and clarity of thought, if you like, by the Shravanam Kirtanam process. And so the mind then becomes subdued or less agitated, and that ability to see clearly within that subtle activity of the mind and the intelligence, we're able to see the correct path of it. We're able to make the right choices, and we're able to engage the mind appropriately with the proper direction of the intelligence. So that purification by chanting and by hearing and chanting effectively, it's mentioned the austerity of the body and speech is, I think, is it speech to regularly recite the Vedic mantras in the Bhagavad Gita, the 17th chapter. In the austerity of speech is to regularly recite. But of course, if we're regularly reciting the Vedic mantras, then we're also absorbing the mind, and so we're thinking of those things as well, right? So a good part of yoga practice is that ability to purify the consciousness, the awareness of these things, because that's, and be able to, intelligence means that ability to see that which is beneficial and that which is not, and that strengthening or honing of the intelligence is a result of our following the bhakti process, right? So, good sadhana, regular engagement in hearing and chanting, regularly hearing and chanting the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, strengthens the intelligence, so we're then able to use that power of intelligence to discriminate between what is beneficial for our spiritual life and what is beneficial for our material life too, for that matter. So, I think that's how to do it. Anybody got a thought? Been hard to work out that, what's that? Because it's all so fluid. Ah, there's the mind. Ah, there's the intelligence. Huh? It's all part of the subtle energy working. But again, that's the advantage of having the association of the devotees. Because the devotees think and act differently to others. Well, they should be. Sometimes they don't also, but that Madras, but another, we have to be tolerant also. Do you agree? add anything?
It's very, very subtle.
Yeah, most subtle.
It's,
yeah, intelligence is the most subtle.
Yeah, it's hard to distinguish between what's coming from intelligence and what's coming from idea. But as you pointed out, it's right. Because intelligence will give you the right advice and the right thought. Mind can be sometimes taken to the wrong direction by itself.
And if you're in doubt, then ask somebody. That's what the spiritual master's for. That's why we have siksha gurus. Siksha guru is the person who can help us distinguish between what's just mental and what's what the thing to do. Mamaha? That's why we engage in the process of bhakti, to purify those tendencies, the residual, the remnants of material life, if you like. And that gets purified gradually over time. So there may be some residual, maybe, not maybe. So again, the process of sadhana will gradually remove those remnants of kama, krodha, mada, lobha, shoka, moha, maya, fear. Yeah, there'll be remnants. But gradually, over time, and the practice of bhakti, they'll be purified. Yeah, so again, that's why we take the association of devotees, we follow Rupa Goswami effectively, and the 64 items of devotional service. That's why the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, is so important, because that gives us all of the things that we need to do. And even Rupa Goswami's Upadeshan, the Nectar of Instruction, gives us all of the things that we need to do to remove lust, greed, anger, all of these different contaminations. And very quickly, if we're a strict sadhaka, regular sadhaka, then these things can be easily mitigated. And then, you know, the more deeper remnants might take time, but it gradually works, gradually. The more one applies the bhakti, you get 9 items of devotional service effectively. Yeah. Okay, I think we should finish here, 25 to 9. Don't worry, I'm not going to